Let's go. So we have new jersey numbers for LSU football. Does that actually tell us something? Here in just a moment, we'll talk about Kim Mulkey. We are exactly a week away from Selection Sunday with the LSU women's basketball team. And we're going to talk about Bear Jones and Monster Milam and the LSU baseball team a little bit later. But it was released today, thanks to our super sharp investigative journalism, that LSU did release new jersey numbers. And I will always say, till I go to the grave, that LSU jersey numbers and just jersey numbers in general, especially in football, do mean something. And you guys know how I am about single-digit numbers. They are the most coveted asset in all of football when it comes to your overall swag and aesthetic. Almost every single player that plays, they want the lowest jersey number possible, all right? So once again, working with a new mic system, type Y for yes, type in for no if you can hear us loud and clear. So number 0 to Marcus Cooley, number 2, Destin Hill, number 3, DJ Pickett. Nick Anderson gets his number 4 from Oklahoma. Mansoor Delane gets his number 4 from Virginia Tech. Barrion Brown, Patrick Payton, 6'6". Jakeem Jackson, number 8. Barrow Sharp gets his number 10 from Oklahoma. Michael Van Buren is number 11. Jamari Butler, 12. Harlan Berry, 22. Charles Ross, 30. And so on and so on. Jack Pyburn gets the same jersey number he had at Florida. Carius Kern gets the same jersey number from high school. Sadir Mitchell, same thing. He wore number 99 at Texas. So if you're not watching via YouTube, you can listen online, obviously, Spotify, iTunes. The full jersey numbers, at least the new jersey numbers, are available to you on my Twitter account at PowerHourLSU. So what do jersey numbers mean? Well, the truth is you are given a good jersey number if you haven't played at all, if LSU thinks you're good. That's the bottom line. Okay? So the first thing is, this is yet another season that number 9 or number 5 was not issued. Okay? I don't know if anybody is ever going to wear number 9 or number 5 ever again, as Jaden Daniels and Joe Burrow both won Heismans. And this is also very important. They're dominant NFL players. They're probably going to win NFL MVPs and Super Bowls. But the big thing to me is Destin Hill got number 2. Destin Hill, this is his fifth year post-high school. Now, I don't know what his eligibility actually looks like, because there were years he didn't play at all for Florida State, but he was in the same recruiting class as Jack Besh, Brian Thomas Jr., Malik Nabers, and so on and so on. And they give him number 2. I mean, this is the number. If you're to play wide receiver at LSU, obviously Kyron Lacy, but Justin Jefferson, Demetrius Byrd, Reuben Randall. If you want to go to the other side of the football, you've had some other good number 2s, like a Ryan Clark, if you will. It is interesting that they gave Destin Hill a single digit. They also gave a single digit to DJ Pickett, which makes a lot of sense. That means that they think he's going to be something. Same thing with Jakeem Jackson. Wore number 2 at Florida. He gets number 8 at LSU. Jersey numbers are a good indication who you think the best players are on your team, because those are the numbers that players want. Now, one thing that's very interesting about the issuing of jersey numbers is a lot of the ones that everybody wants that aren't taken up were given to transfers. Now, why were they given to transfers? Well, that was probably a selling point when you were trying to recruit them in the transfer portal. Hey, you come over, we're going to give you a single digit. You didn't have one at Florida State, we're going to give you one here. That was probably part of the recruiting process. Or it might have just been an understood thing. It might not have been a part of the recruiting process at all. But I'm not the only one that has said that. I spoke to someone with knowledge of the jersey number process, and it can be a very selective thing. You see it all the time where a player has an opportunity to get into a lower digit, and they take it immediately. They take it immediately, almost every single time. So that to me is the biggest news coming from spring football. They obviously already had a practice, but we won't really see anything until practices this week. Now, the big story today, LSU baseball, man, they look good. They look really good. You can come to your own conclusions over who LSU was going up against. You can also make your own conclusions about how far this team can actually go this next year, or this year, if you will. But one thing that is hard to do, it doesn't matter who you're playing against, is crush the baseball. LSU baseball right now is crushing the baseball. They're tearing the cover off of it. 11 runs today, 6 runs yesterday, 13 runs in 7 innings, 13 runs in 7 innings, 11, 12, 11, 8, 7, 13, 12. They have not scored less than 6 runs in the game since February 22nd versus Omaha. Now, where there are some instances a little bit earlier in the year where you were watching LSU play Purdue, Fort Wayne, and Southern, and they were tearing the cover off the baseball then, do you worry a little bit that the schedule has been a little too easy? Maybe so, but you put up 7 against a ranked Dallas Baptist team. So LSU looks the part. They look the part as a baseball team. And that is all that matters at this point. We won't know really anything until SEC play. Shout out to LSU softball. I do want to talk LSU women's basketball. We did get the big news that Anissa Morrow is okay. If they played today, Anissa Morrow would have probably tried to tough it out. So I think a lot of you are privy to the knowledge that South Carolina blew the brakes off of Texas today. I told you yesterday, go bet South Carolina versus Texas. And you guys know I never give you betting advice. I make my own plays privately. If you guys want me to give you more betting advice, go for it. I would love to do that. I come up with my own projections, learning more about modeling. But the bottom line is I will always, 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 always bet South Carolina in a big game. It's just what I do, especially considering that Texas had to play the later game and then turn around in less than 24 hours and play the best team in the sport. And Texas got blown out. They got blown out today. Spread was 3.5. It was a lot more than that. South Carolina, in South Carolina, everyone knew that they were going to run away with it. If we would have beaten Texas, and I know that was a game that we wanted because we blew the game a few weeks ago. But y'all, us losing last night was the best case scenario. What if we would have played South Carolina today and Anissa Morrow said, look, I want to tough it out and play today. What if she would have gotten hurt worse? I understand if we would have beaten South Carolina, it would have been nice. Would have been really, really nice to say that we finally beat Dawn Staley. That's been something that's been bothering us for forever. But I'm looking at all of you right now. Thank the good Lord. The good Lord that we lost yesterday. South Carolina would have blown us out. We would have played a game that would have probably done us no good. And even if we win, the job's not finished. So I thought the SEC tournament went about how I would have wanted it to go. Win at least one game and look really good in that game. And then versus a really good Texas team, be very competitive. So this is very key. I was confused by this a little bit earlier as well. Selection Sunday for the women's isn't until next week. So the women's tourney, we are still 2 weeks away from when we actually get this thing underway. So we still got a little bit of time from now until then. Flage is going to have, what, a month off now to be ready to go? And this LSU team will be dangerous. Are we going to win it all? No. If we win it all, Kim Mulkey is the best coach of all time. But we're not going to win it all, and that's okay. That's okay. I just don't think we have enough outside of our big three to get it done. Maybe if Samaya Smith was a little bit better as far as scoring, or if we got a little bit more out of some of the other post players and the transfer guards that we brought in, maybe. But the good news is that if Texas was the number one team in the country, then this year is not a strong season when it comes to true powerhouses. Now, UConn's going to be the favorite to win it all, alongside South Carolina, one of those two. UCLA and USC are better teams than us. Obviously, Notre Dame is a better team than us. NC State's probably better than us right now. Texas, who just beat us, I mean, we're probably even with them. But do I think this team could go to the Final Four? Yeah. Do I think this team can get to the Sweet 16? Yeah. Elite Eight? Yeah. Win it all, then Flage is a freaking goat. That means she would have gone on Carmelo Anthony's Sun Run. So I like where we are as a team, and hopefully some of our role players continue to play well. And then we can also talk some LSU men's basketball. I don't want to spend too much time on it. But the majority of tonight, we will talk LSU football and LSU women's basketball. Okay? Let's go to Anika. Anissa's health is more important. Yes, I would have, even though we're still so far away from the tournament, I would have preferred us not play at all and we get an extra day of rest for Mora. Yeah, Chance, we can get into this. South Carolina gets a home game every year for the SEC tournament. All right, so there's two ways to look at it. I would probably be a little bit more outraged by that if it was men's, because men's tickets are going to sell a little bit better no matter where you put it. But by far, maybe outside of LSU, South Carolina has the biggest brand. Right now, they do have the biggest brand in the entire sport, okay? Greenville is a good location for it. They sell tickets. They sell tickets. It's just that simple. Maybe if they put the tournament in New Orleans, that's a good tourist location. It's hosted SEC tournaments in the past for the men. Maybe you sell some tickets there. Nashville, it would do pretty well probably. But I don't know where it is next year. South Carolina, though, is just – they sell tickets. I mean, it's just that simple. Their fans travel everywhere. It's the Oklahoma softball effect. They weren't really anything before Patty Gasso. She gets there, turns it into a power. Same thing with Dawn. So – there you go. And as you point out, gymnastics is really, really, really good. We'll talk more about them as time moves on. I did see, now this is the most casual gymnastics opinion of all time, that Livy Dunn did get hurt. But I also saw that this team had a record weekend. So shout out to Coach Jay Clark. And I also saw Jay Clark supporting the LSU men's basketball team. I really do appreciate that, Mr. Jay Clark. We can use all the support that we can get, okay? Let's go to a few other football news and notes. Look, I saw the clip that they did release. It wasn't really anything crazy. It was just a really well-edited clip. Once we get some practice footage out there. We'll do our normal breakdowns on our channel. I do want to make one big announcement when it comes to those videos. That I would be very wary about the offensive line alignment for LSU during the spring. Now, why is that the case? Well, I'll show you this in the actual roster that I do not believe all the LSU offensive linemen that are going to play for us next year will be available during the spring. All right. And the big one who did not get a jersey number, which leads me to believe, I thought he was going to be available for spring, Josh Thompson. Did I get a jersey number today? So my understanding is that he will not be available for spring football. He's probably our best offensive lineman next year. So these are the players right now that did not get jersey numbers. Aiden Anding, Jacob Bradford, Jaden Breaker, Brandon Brown, CJ, Jim Coyley, JT Lindsey, Walter Mathis, Keelan Moses, Jace Thomas, Josh Thompson, Zach Weeks, and Philip Wright III. I thought initially that Thompson was going to be available for spring, but he's not. Just one little note. So why is that important? Well, he's going to start. He is by far our highest rated returnee. Now, he's not returning from LSU, but he's returning from college football. I'm really excited about him. Okay. Chance says Thompson will be available March 21st. Okay. So he will be available for spring. But it is a quarter system. Okay. So I was like, wait, I thought for sure he was going to be available. So thankfully, he will be there. But even if that is the case, we do not know who those other two offensive linemen are going to be. Now, I will say one thing, and I'll keep hammering this point. Carius Kern is the name that I keep hearing making big splashes in terms of his overall athleticism at LSU. Now, I know Carius. I don't know him well, but we have texted a semi-decent amount, and this guy is built different. Mentally, physically, he is ready to go. And if I were to pick the most shocking starter on this LSU offensive line next year, I would probably pick him. So I'm very interested to see how this actually shakes up when it comes to how they want to align this group, but Carius Kern, be on the lookout for him. All right. Now, before we get to this first break, we'll take a few different questions. Bullfrog says, any word on LSU spring practice so far? Not really anything. You know, it was just the first practice. I mean, you do hear that this guy made a catch or that guy made a catch. I will tell you this. I think, especially with wide receiver, you need to be very careful when it comes to news and notes. Now, why at wide receiver specifically? Well, there's one thing about receiver that people get wrong when it comes to spring practice. We'll talk about that right after this.
Let's go!
On a journey together with Zion Imaging, I want you to see this experience up close. And me as a wedding and event DJ, I watched how everybody had so much fun with Zion Imaging. And a big reason for their success is the team. Yes, Jaron Thomas and his family started this off as a passion project, and they have one simple goal in mind: taking your event to the next level. Whether it's a wedding, reunion, quinceañera, school, or corporate event, Zion Imaging is all about family-friendly fun.
And I got to show you on this tour the high-level technology that quickly sends your video session to your phone, whether it's iPhone or Android. Yes, it's the Zion Imaging 360 Spin Booth experience serving North Texas, North Louisiana, South Arkansas, Orlando, and more. Give us a call, 318-469-4265. Check us out on Facebook or book us at Zion Imaging, xyanimaging.com. Are you a diehard LSU fan? And would you like to understand the complex game of football better? Well, sign up today for our PHL Patreon. This is his second touchdown. Counter GY, you're pulling the guard. We dive deep on recruiting and the transfer portal at a level that you have never seen before. Film breakdowns from so many different angles. And my personal favorites, oh yeah, the analytics, baby. I like to get nerdy. We take a look at cutting edge statistics that help all of us understand LSU football even better. And guess what? Every new signup gets a Joe Burrow card in the mail for free. But we got to save the best for last. Our private Discord community of LSU fans from around the globe. Sign up today. Patreon.com/LSU football and put your name on our wall of patrons. Special thanks to everybody who's on here. Let's freaking go.
So you have got to be careful with wide receiver because everybody's catching passes. So in an actual football game with Garrett's a little bit, it is a little bit different because he led the SEC in attempts. And he doesn't run a lot. So in theory, there's going to be a lot more volume when it comes to throws from Garrett Nussmeier. All right. We do get a super chat here from TJ when it comes to wide receiver. We'll get to it right after this. But even with that said, there's a gazillion reps that happen in spring football, whether it's 7-on-7, one-on-one drills, practice drills, and one guy who continuously made plays last spring and some even in the fall that people made news of, and he made diving catches, moss catches, was Shelton Sampson. Shelton Sampson made quite a few plays last spring and last fall. He played a decent amount last year, and he finished his LSU career with 0 catches. So be careful when it comes to wide receiver. We go to TJ, though. He says, my wide receiver prediction is that Chris Hilton catches less passes this year than he did last. Brown, Anderson, and the other Anderson take over. That's a hot take. That is a scorcher. Now, TJ, my question to you would be, do you think it's because you're predicting another injury? Because Nick Anderson's also coming off injury. Baron Brown has been very durable, and Aaron Anderson also has injury history. So are you projecting a potential injury with CJ Chris Hilton? Or are you just kind of baking that into your prediction? I will say it is something that Chris Hilton and Garrett Nussmeier lit it up the final two games. All right. The second thing that's interesting about Chris lighting it up is that him and Garrett had bad chemistry before that. I mean, really, really, really bad chemistry. And this is rare, especially at LSU. The Tigers gave Garrett and Chris time to iron that out. You rarely, rarely see that. If a wide receiver is dropping the ball a lot, or it's a slight overthrow, or in Chris's instance, he was jumping a little too early to go up and make catches, you're going to get benched. But Brian Kelly stuck with them, and it paid off. Oklahoma game, that was a Chris Hilton game. The Baylor game, another Chris Hilton game. Now can he do it for an entire season? Oklahoma was not a good team. Now, they were a good defense, but they weren't a good team. And obviously, Baylor wasn't a good team either. Now, what are Chris Hilton's other big games? Well, he caught a big touchdown versus Grambling last year. Also last year in a bowl game versus Wisconsin, he was amazing. But that was a bowl game. You know, a lot of people question the validity of having production at all in a bowl game. But I do think TJ is just higher on Barry and Brown and Nick Anderson. Now, I don't think you have to worry about Chris when it comes to Aaron Anderson because they play two completely different roles. Chris Hilton, more of an outside, lift the top off the defense player. And Aaron, of course, is more intermediate. But let's talk about Barry and Brown and Nick Anderson. I would love to. Part of why I'm not diving too deep into spring is because we're going to be talking about these guys so much. And these other sports are in the prime season. But we get a super chance, so we'll spend a lot of time on this. Let's talk about Barry and Brown. 600-plus yards as a true freshman, 500-plus yards as a true sophomore, 400-ish yards as a true junior. So, if you were to look at Barry and Brown, and you were to watch him as a true freshman, you would have never, never, ever, ever thunk that he would be playing a fourth year of college football. That's how good he was as a true freshman. In fact, you would have to go really deep to find a true freshman receiver that tore up a Kirby Smart defense quite like Barry and Brown did at Kentucky as a true freshman. That's how dominant of a game that was. But what's held him back? Well, there have been fluctuating quarterback situations. There's also been changes at the offensive coordinator. And you guys know how critical I am of Kentucky. That is a weird, weird team to play for. So, why do I like Barry and Brown coming over to LSU? Well, the first thing is the situation for Barry and Brown goes from one that is an absolute terrible spot to be a wide receiver, which is Kentucky, where Brock Vandergriff wasn't that good last year. And he was having to share targets with Dane Key, who is just a better overall receiver than him. I could argue, though, that Barry and Brown is a better fit for LSU because LSU really does just need a burner just in case Chris Hilton gets hurt. Adding an extra burner in Barry and Brown, that gives you two legitimate lift the top off a defense types of players. Something else I really like about Barry Brown is his best games as a collegiate player. His biggest moments as a collegiate player came versus his best teams. True freshman, best game, Georgia. We mentioned that a minute ago. True sophomore, best game, Clemson. Now that was a bowl game, but that is a Clemson Tigers defense. And their defenses every year are really good. Then, of course, last year, his big moment came versus Ole Miss in the single most important game in the SEC last year, which was Kentucky upsetting Ole Miss. I think if Ole Miss gets into the playoff, I think they have a legitimate shot of winning it because I thought they were the best team I saw last year in college football. And Barry and Brown made the big 4th-and-7 catch. It was an extremely difficult catch, and he almost housed it. All right. So, Barry Brown, elite speed, and then we get to the wild card, is that he is arguably the best kickoff return guy ever in the SEC. Now, will he return kicks next season? It's kind of a weird situation because you're returning two different players who returned kicks for touchdowns last year, and Aaron Anderson and, of course, Xavion Thomas. So, what is there to not like about Barrion Brown? Is there anything that makes you think that this could not go the way that we expect it to? Well, you can go watch for yourself the actual Barrion Brown film study that we did. The downward trajectory in production is something. Drops, fumbles, that is a decent part of his profile. Not a big part. I don't even think decent is the right word. It is just a small aspect of his game. Then, after the catch, there is a little to be desired. It's not truly breathtaking for a guy with his athletic profile. All right. So, do I like Barrion Brown with LSU? I do. You can go look at my Twitter. I tweeted something before the season. I thought he was going to be a star last year. But Vandegrift sucked. So, we'll see what happens next year. The thing that Barrion Brown is probably the most excited about, more so the single-digit number, more so the NIL, more than anything, is the volume. More than likely, our run game isn't magically going to become one of the best in the SEC. We're going to be a very throw-heavy team again. He goes from an offense that had, I'd have to go look it up again, but 350 pass attempts to an offense that had 500 pass attempts last year. All right. So what is 150 divided by 13. Somebody do that for me real quick. They had roughly 10 pass attempts per game extra that you're going to have. That would excite me if I was Barrion Brown. Let's talk about Nick Anderson, the second part of TJ's Super Chat. Also an interesting situation. True freshman, he doesn't play. Redshirt. And then his year 2 year was good. It really was good. There was really good tape out there. Then as a year three player, he gets hurt early and he doesn't play at all. Part of the most injured wide receiver core in the history of college football, which was the Oklahoma Sooners. They lost their four best pass catchers. Not only did they lose them, they lost them early in the season with a bad offensive coordinator, bad offensive line, and the worst quarterback room maybe in the history of the SEC. So him being out was a big deal for Oklahoma, a huge deal. Let's talk about the positives. The first is he made extremely difficult catches. His catch in the bowl game versus Arizona was freaking incredible. It was breathtaking. He also was really good on deep crossers, and he also becomes the biggest wide receiver in our room. We're not the biggest wide receiver room. A lot of six flat guys. We don't have that 6'3", 6'4", Terrace Marshall type. We're hoping Shelton Sampson was going to be that for us. He wasn't. But Nick Anderson comes in, and he actually reminds me a lot of, and this is diving deep. So if you love deep analysis, please go ahead, hit that subscribe button, ring the bell. Join our PHL Patreon. Speaking of wide receivers, we're giving out an autographed Jamar Chase jersey at the end of April. All you got to do is sign up for the PHL Patreon. And if you sign up today, while I'm live, if you sign up, I cover your first month. If you sign up, link is down below. Who doesn't want a Jamar Chase autographed uniform? Every PHL patron gets a Joe Burrow card in the mail. Nick Anderson actually reminds me a lot of Garrett Nussmeier's number one option in high school, who's now with the Florida Gators, J. Michael Sturdivant, who was at Cal to start his career. We played him last year with UCLA, and now he goes to Florida. I was interested in Sturdivant this year because of the connection with Garrett Nussmeier. Similar builds. I think Nick Anderson's better, though. Now, once again, we have 1 year of proven production. I also think Nick Anderson, in one of his tougher games versus Oklahoma State a few years ago, had a tough game. Tough game. Had a big drop in that game. But that's nitpicking. He's a good player. Now, here's what you need to know about him. He's not a burner. Okay, he's not going to be one of these guys that is spectacular after the catch. That's not really his game. But overall, he's a big target, and he's good enough to play in the SEC. So this is why Chris Hilton, to me, is still, if I had to pick one player today to lead LSU in receiving, it would be Chris. And I have been more critical of Chris than most because of the injury history and him leaving his feet too quickly. It still doesn't make me comfortable saying that I think he's going to be the best receiver. But one thing I'll say with Garrett and the way he plays quarterback is LSU's best receiver last year was Aaron Anderson. You can make a case it was Kyren Lacy. You can make a somewhat flimsy case that it's C.J. Daniels and Garrett just missed him a bunch. But the one thing that's interesting about Aaron Anderson is there were extreme, and I mean extreme growing pains between him and Garrett early in their careers. There were a few instances in just mop-up duty time where Aaron would run a different route than what Garrett thought he was going to run. There were some drops mixed in there. And eventually, the two had some of the best chemistry you'll see between a first-year starter at quarterback and a first-year starter at wide receiver. The same thing happened with Chris. Him and Garrett, rough in-game chemistry, it eventually started to click. So, you know, with Chris, we might not have seen the absolute best that these two have to offer together. And one thing I would say to Garrett, and this is a big misnomer about our offense last year, is not only did we not have a running game, we also lacked the over-the-top deep ball accuracy that we need to succeed. And the overall deep ball accuracy that gives us the explosiveness to have a truly elite offense. Because two things were happening. Number one, their defenses could play soft versus us because we couldn't run versus lighter boxes. We just could not run the football versus six-man boxes. So when we can't run the football versus six-man boxes, you can play more two high in quarters, and it's harder to throw the football deep. Now, you don't need to know what all of that means. It's just simple. In order to throw the football deep, you need to have Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. We didn't have those guys. Or you need to be able to run the football. Okay. We didn't have Malik and BTJ, and then we couldn't run the ball. We'd like to think our run game's going to get better. But even when we had some opportunities to throw deep balls, we struggled. We really, really, really struggled. Now, there was a few that Garrett put right on the money. And in particular, on slot fades, he was really good. Had the deep one versus South Carolina to Aaron, and then he had, to me, one of the best slot fades you'll ever see, the deep touchdown to Kyle Parker, who is someone else we've not talked a whole lot about. He's coming off injury, and he's still in the mix here. But, man, there are some bad deep balls thrown. Just downright bad ones, forced ones. And that needs to get better. It's just that simple. It just needs to get better. But you guys know, I am so pro Garrett. I know from now until the end of eternity, and I've gotten a few messages from you guys thinking that, like, me and Blake don't like each other because we argue about Garrett all the time. And I don't think Blake hates Garrett. I don't think a lot of you hate Garrett that points out the turnovers, because I point out the turnovers. But I think the thing that people get wrong about the turnovers, and I think is it's very relevant to this conversation, were some of those turnovers really bad? Yes, the Texas A&M 3rd-and-2 interception is one of the worst in LSU football history. It's definitely in the top 10. Definitely in the top 10. If you don't make that INT, there's still a really good shot you win the game. That's how much it flipped the game. That 3rd-and-2 INT, that was just downright stupid. It is one of the worst throws I have ever seen. But you had to know going into the season, and this is always the case with every first-year starter, there is going to be a game a first-year starting quarterback is going to lose because of him. And that was it. Now, were there other things that we didn't do? Yeah, we couldn't stop Marcel Reed on simple zone read principle things. That was also a big reason. But if Garrett doesn't throw that pick, you win that game versus Texas A&M, you're very much in the college football playoff hunt. And we ended up losing and getting blown out by Alabama, but still, you would have been in it. Okay? The thing that I keep going back to about Garrett, and I highly recommend you watch Texas and their offense, you watch Tennessee and their offense, you watch some of the best play callers in college football in their offenses, they just scheme shit up so much better than us. And I know I've been very critical of Joe Sloan in here. I will say Joe Sloan works his ass off. He was recruiting a 2027 quarterback this weekend. The guy really puts a lot into it. He's just not as good of a play caller or offensive orchestrator as Steve Sarkisian. And it's not a slight at Sloan, really. It's just the truth. Quinn Ewers was not better than Garrett Nussmeier. Nico was not better than Garrett Nussmeier last year. I did film studies on Tennessee every week. I did a few film studies on Texas, but I did watch a lot of Texas. Y'all, the way they run offense, everything is just schemed up so much easier. I'm just telling you, whether it's throws to the running backs, tight ends, leaks, their run games are better. And the reason why I bring that up is because for all our offense last year to function, we needed Garrett to make really difficult throws. Really, really, really difficult throws. That's part of why the NFL guys were so high on him. You want to know why there was such a strong push from, like, people at the Senior Bowl and NFL analyst? It wasn't just because he has a last name synonymous with quarterback coaching and playing in the league. It wasn't that. It's that what he was being asked to do is what NFL offenses were being asked to do. Okay? And this is all while on every single snap, his center was in his lap. And I just think you're shrinking what he did last year as a first-year starting quarterback just down to turnovers. And that's the thing I don't get about the turnover people. It's just the turnovers. A&M game, I'll give you that. South Carolina game, there was a few, but you take his 10 best throws from that South Carolina game and you put it up against anybody in college football's 10 best throws in a single game, and you tell me, you find a game where there was 10 better throws than Garrett made in that game versus South Carolina. on the road with the defense playing like ass. He won us the game. Him and Caden Durham and some clutch defensive snaps, and also their quarterback getting hurt. By the way, I got a message from a fan of the channel. He said, I've been watching a long time. He thinks, because I mentioned that someone in Garrett's inner circle watches our channel and is in our Patreon. I'm only being nice to Garrett because, well, that's the case, and I've shared this before and whatever. And one of Garrett's classmates who used to be in our chat, I don't know what happened to him. You know, I'm not just defending him just to defend him. You think he's the only guy that has someone in a circle that watches our channel? The guy was phenomenal last year. He was phenomenal. But the turnovers, I don't give a shit. Now, if you're turning the football over and we have a good running game that we can fall back on, then that's worse. But no, we were the best offense in all of college football last year at converting third and sevens or longer. I also think he force-fed Kyron Lacy way too much. So I think Kyron leaving is actually going to be a good thing for him. Even though Kyron's a very good wide receiver, I think him not forcing it to Kyron is actually going to make him even better next year. So I'm excited what Garrett's going to do. All right. But what we're going to get into a thousand different Garrett debates until the end of eternity. Or until Clemson. Scotty B, I will not talk about that. Let's go to Mello. LSU might turn Berrien Brown into a first-round wide receiver. Who are the best receivers in next year's class? I need to really sit down and think about it because, you know, the discussion, BB, is like the next class. So the next class is going to be Ryan Williams, Jeremiah Smith. That might go 1 and 2 in the NFL draft. But I would need to look that up. Who are the best 2026 wide receivers? Who would that be? Did Evan Stewart go back to Oregon? I guess it would be him. Well, I should say it's going to be Aaron Anderson. Let's see. Oh, man, it is wide open. So, yeah, Aaron Anderson is back. But look at this. This is who NFL Draft Buzz has. Not a strong group. Now, the next crop, good luck with Jeremiah Smith in there. Zachariah Branch, who's at Georgia now. Mekhi Lemon, Carnell Tate, Antonio Williams, Jeremy Bernard, Evan Stewart. Nicholas Harbor. Yeah, this is kind of weak. Kendrick Law is on here. Our starter, man, we talked about him a little bit earlier. So maybe you're right. Maybe Berrien Brown does find his way. There's Nick Anderson right there. Let's see what they have at QB. Uh,
Let's go to one. Ooh, they have Sellers ahead of Garrett. I can see it. It's not how I do it, but Drew Allar? I'm a little shocked Drew Allar didn't come out this year. Arch number one. I don't think Arch is going to come out after this next year, though. Nico, Allar, Sellers, Nuss, Klubnik. I actually think Sam Levitt's going to be the number one quarterback. He's got juice, man. I like Sam Levitt. Number three and number seven. Let's go, Mr. LSU fan. That's the energy I like. That's what we need. Now, I do want to discuss a Saints topic. Derek Carr is your quarterback next year. Okay. I'll even move the mic up here. Derek Carr is your quarterback. Okay. Come in a little bit tighter. Derek Carr is your quarterback. It sucks. There's just no other way around it. It sucks that Derek Carr is going to be our quarterback next year. And I say are. Not all of you are Saints fans. Here's something, and Josh Allen got paid. He still had 4 years left on his deal, and the Bills still rewarded him, as they should. The Bills are nothing without Josh Allen. I can make a case, you know, that is the most QB-reliant team in the NFL, outside of the Commanders, because the Bills have some other decent pieces, Commanders not so much. For Derek Carr to not take a pay cut lets me know that there's never enough money for anybody. Never, it's just never enough. He's taken all $40 million. $40 million when he's made $30+ million to play quarterback over the last three seasons alone. Even after taxes and money he's probably already spent in his life, he definitely has a cool $100 million just sitting in the bank. $40 million on a team he knows is struggling. It's no bueno. So let me ask you guys this. Do you want the Saints to draft a quarterback? Would you want the Saints to take Shedeur Sanders at pick number nine? There's going to be some good players around that pick number nine spot. Is that something that would interest you, ladies and Gentiles? I did find it interesting, though. Geno Smith to the Raiders, DK Metcalf to the Seahawks, Davante Adams to the Rams. You probably didn't hear this by now. Luka Doncic to the Lakers. Could you believe that? You probably haven't heard that yet. It's breaking news. I don't even know where to begin with Derek Carr. Don't even know where to begin. But he will be your quarterback next year. And we will happily go 9-8 and win the NFC South. Huh? As long as we beat the Falcons, I am happy. Now, here's what we're going to do in the next 5 to 10 minutes. I'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. If we super chat, we can keep this party moving. Tomorrow, y'all got to pray for me. I'm starting a 5-day fast. A 5-day fast. Oh, God, I opened up Twitter for the first time. It might have been whoever mentioned the Odell thing a minute ago. I am not touching that. Oh, not touching that. I do not think Luka Doncic and the Lakers are going to win at all. I do not think that's going to happen. I also think Seattle is actively tanking. I do. Super chat so I can eat. Huh? It's the off season, Jared. I'm used to it. Do I think Spears? You talking about Marcus or Deshaun? Doug Nussmeier is the offensive coordinator? That would be crazy. Doug coaching Garrett. That would be wild. So Doug's pretty much locked in to be the OC for the Saints the next two seasons, right? I would be shocked if, after a year of Derek Carr, they fire Doug Nussmeier, who went with Kellen Moore every step of the way these past couple of seasons. The Chargers, Eagles, Cowboys. So, yeah, I mean, that could work. Let's go to John. How long will it take for DJ Pickett to overtake Ashton Stamps? Not long. It's going to be hard in terms of Stamps. Here's what I would say about Ashton, because I was very critical of him towards the end of the season. Jared, thank you for your super chat. I appreciate it. Did Stamps have a tough close to the year last year? Yes, it was really, really, really tough. Florida game wasn't great at all. It was my lowest graded game from a defensive back with Stamps versus Florida, which is, you know. The thing was, versus USC, he was really good. Had a really good game to start the year. It was a weird fall off because at the end of the season, it looked like he kind of forgot how to play football. So I don't know if there was something, and this can happen. Obviously, there could have been something that happened personally to him. But, you know, I'm not out on him as a player. I'm interested in him in some different roles, potentially as a safety, potentially as an occasional nickel or a dime or a special teamer. But do I think, based on what we saw at the end of the season, is he an outside corner in the SEC? I just can't get there. I just can't. But I don't think he's just downright atrocious. But once again, the final month of the season was tough. It was really tough. Oklahoma doesn't count. Nothing counts versus Oklahoma's offense last year, and they will tell you that themselves, okay? So, look, our DBs in general, that month of November was brutal. They had a tough game versus Vanderbilt, tough game versus Baylor, tough game versus Florida, and none of those three offenses were necessarily elite offenses. Now, they were good offenses. All three of them were good offenses, but they weren't elite, okay? So, there you go. Been moving here. Let's go. Another super. Now you keep delivering. Look, I'm very blessed to get to do this for a living. That's why I'm giving out an autographed Jamar Chase uniform, is because of people like you, because of all our patrons. Our patrons, you guys are the real MVPs, but honestly, all of you are real MVPs. This time of the year sucks, okay? I always say this. The most brutal sport to be a fan of is college football. It's brutal. You have such few amount of games. And then on top of that, when you play, there's two or three games a year you play that aren't meant to be close. So if you really want to hammer it down, you play 8 to 9 games every year. And then throughout this offseason, I'm really going to focus on the future of the sport. And we normally do this during off seasons, but I'll be honest with you. I really push back on the notion that I am disliking college football. Okay, I really push back on it, and there's a piece of me that liked the future of college football. But y'all, I'm not ever going to sit here and front. I'm always open about what I feel I know a decent amount of, about, which obviously is mostly LSU football and LSU women's basketball. So I feel like I need to be authentic with you guys right now. My love for college football has taken a bit of a hit because of expanded playoff and because of all the bickering about NIL this and everything when it comes to conference realignment. It's hard. It's hard to be a fan of this sport that you've loved for so freaking long. It's really, really, really hard. So I'm not the only one that's like this. It's just there's other college football channels that are afraid to say this publicly. Now, do I still love college football with every fiber of my being? Yeah, I do. I really, really, really do. Do I still love college football more than I love the NFL? Yes. But NFL's taken up a bigger part of my life with Power Hour NFL. The channel's done well. I'm working on a Tom Brady series right now, and I'm not even a Tom Brady fan. I don't really – I've honestly never done a Brady video. It's kind of a – go out on a limb kind of thing. But, you know, it's tough. The thing that's really pissed me off is the conference expansion and the playoff expansion. I just don't think any of those things are plausible. And I do think to your super, that's part of why Bo Davis left. You know, what's interesting, there was a photo from Dylan Berryman. He took one with Bo Davis. I think that was earlier today. I think Bo Davis still likes recruiting and all of that, but let's go to Chance. What do I think about Eddie George getting the Bowling Green job? Happy for Eddie. I was a big Eddie George fan because I was a big Steve McNair fan growing up. And there is a piece of me that wonders how much better is that job than the Tennessee State job where he was. I don't know. But I'm kind of intrigued by the era of the athlete head coach. I am. And I purposefully didn't want to talk too much Kyle Williams because we've talked about him so much. But it does seem teams are more interested in giving athletes opportunities to coach quickly, even if they have a lack of experience. I will say, Chance, and this is kind of a side tangent. One sport where I think experience really does matter is men's college basketball. I would never, as an athletic director, hire a men's college basketball coach that has never been a head coach. I want some head coaching experience at a big job where I'm hiring you. And what happens is a lot of these jobs hire an assistant coach that was already on the bench when a coach retired or once played for the university. That means jack squat. Go hire someone that's proven. Okay. Let's go to Jared's Super Chat. College football should stay geographic. The us against them is what made college football great. I agree. The SEC would never do this, but I would split the conference into two. And then in basketball and baseball, you become one big conference. All right. What I would do when the SEC becomes a 20-team league. Right now, we're a 16-team league. A 20-team SEC should drop off into two separate leagues. And then you play the same nine teams every year. That's the only way this would make sense. And there's a lot of different things you can do with that. You know, one thing I think that would be interesting, and I'm kind of just spitballing here, but you guys know I'm a big EPL fan. English Premier League Soccer. It's what I do. I think you can do a promotion relegation type of thing where three teams in the top flight can make it to the college football playoff, and one team from the bottom flight can play the number four team in the top flight for the chance to go to the SEC championship game. And then you can have a promotion relegation. Bottom three teams go down, top three teams go up. That, to me, would make a lot of sense. It would be very compelling. But as much as promotion and relegation would make sense, it's never going to happen. I do think, though, in terms of college football's concern, when the SEC expands, which I think it will, I've heard repeatedly that Sankey's in no rush for expansion there. I don't know. I think my interest in college football will go down some even more. Which two teams do I think will join the SEC next? UNC and Virginia both make a lot of sense. You know, Clemson and Florida State are bigger brands. But I have long heard, and once again, I'm not powerful. I'm always telling you this about sources and people that claim to have sources. We talked about it with the Kyle Williams thing. There was an LSU reporter who wrongly reported who the next defensive line coach will be. I told my whole story about breaking news and all of that. And we all make mistakes, whatever. I've just heard this. I know some people in the media industry. I used to work production trucks, all that stuff. I think the SEC would be the most interested in North Carolina, even though Clemson and Florida State are the ones potentially paying hundreds of millions of dollars to get out of the ACC. I've just heard that repeatedly. North Carolina makes more sense than Clemson and Florida State. It's another state. North Carolina basketball is the biggest brand in college basketball. They put up the biggest number outside of Duke. So you bring them in. They have some football history. But that is a big-ass basketball brand. And the SEC is already, you know, making noise as a basketball conference. Never in a million years in my adolescence would I have told you, hey, the ACC stinks, which it did stink, and the SEC would be considered arguably the best conference in the history of the sport. Some have said that. I'm not smart enough to say yes or no to that. I don't think that's the case. I mean, there's so many of those Jim Boeheim, Coach K, Roy Williams, ACCs, that were just so freaking good. But North Carolina would make the most sense. North Carolina would make the most sense. I've always believed that, too. It just logically makes sense. North Carolina leave Duke and NC State. Yeah, I don't give a damn about them. I will say, Chance, that would piss off a lot of people that are North Carolina fans if you lose your annual rivalry games versus those two teams. But, I mean, rivalry games are lost every year. We don't play Auburn every year. Life moves on. NC State fires Kevin Keats the year after he goes to a Final Four. There's a lot of people bickering about that. How does a coach go to a Final Four? That was one of the more miracle runs last year in the NCAA tournament. So I understood them firing him. But you got to pay him $8 million to walk away. And then you got to get another coach. I'm not doing that unless I know Will Wade is signing or some other elite coach is signing. Okay. There you go. So Franco believes I'm not going to be able to do the 5 days. I hope so. I'm fasting for 5 days. Tyler, what's good? I've already gone on a Derek Carr tangent. Where do I think Will Wade will land? I don't know. Obviously, if Texas offers him a job, he's going to go. But there were quite a few insiders that mentioned him with NC State. I would love that. I don't want Will Wade in the SEC. I also think the ACC being weak isn't good. In basketball, they need to be strong. And once again, if I were a consultant, if they hired Carter Bryant to be head coaching consultant, the one thing I would not allow my team to do is hire an assistant coach who's never been a head coach. I think Miami did that today, or Florida State, either one. They hired a coach who was just an assistant. Not doing that. Give me somebody with experience that's actually been a head coach. South Alabama, Will Wade. I kind of hope he stays at McNeese. My McNeese friends are loving it. I don't have a lot of McNeese friends, but this comes in from Matt. Do I think 9-5 should be retired at LSU? TCU got the number 2 overall seed. But should jersey numbers be retired at LSU? Obviously, I don't think Joe Burrow's number should ever be worn again. You know, you win a natty, go undefeated, Heisman Trophy. He'll be talked about forever. Jaden Daniels, man, it's tough because Do I think someone should ever wear number 5 again? No. I think it should be retired if you win the freaking Heisman. But single digits matter. You know, we talked about this earlier. They really, really, really do matter. So you're losing some of your single digit equity if you retire them. There's a lot of teams that have had Jaden Daniels that have had Jaden Daniels types of players, and the jersey doesn't get retired. Y'all, Tim Tebow's jersey is not retired at Florida. They have had far shittier quarterbacks wear number 15. Anthony Richardson wore 15, and then, of course, someone else who wore number 15 was their quarterback this past season. The transfer from Wisconsin, Graham Mertz. If anybody deserves a jersey number retirement, wouldn't you think it'd be Tim Tebow? Natty, Heisman Trophy, Sugar Bowl? So you get into a slippery slope about who wears what jersey number. Cam Newton's number 2 has not been worn again. That's fair. And I also think it's fair if nobody ever wears Joe Burrow's number 9 or Jaden Daniels' number 5. Yeah, I was talking about college basketball coaches. My favorite will always be Tom Izzo. I grew up a big Michigan State fan because, you know, when they won the Natty, I was a kid. I saw Mateen Cleaves, Morris Peterson. Did you see this earlier today? And this is one of our old school live streams where we're just going on and on about topics. I don't know how many more of these I have in me. Remember those streams? You would go 3 hours. I don't give a damn. Wife's out of town. I don't give a damn. Y'all want to have a party? We're going to have a party. I kind of like holding the microphone close to my face, too, the little thing. Or do you guys want me to snap it back on? I don't know which one sounds better. That was lame. Let me know if you guys have enjoyed the new microphone. Because I move around too much for like a actual professional microphone. But if you want me to go back to the pro mic, I'll happily do that as well. I feel like I'm Speed, the streamer. Okay. Now, I freaking love Tom Izzo. So earlier today, some Michigan players were standing, and Michigan was getting blown out. Michigan State had the game won. And a Michigan State point guard got in the face of Michigan players saying, hey, you don't stand on the Spartan logo. And this was with a minute left in the game. One of Michigan State's players got into Michigan's faces and said, you don't stand on our logo. See, that's the shit I miss. That's what I miss. And he tried to start a fight. That's what I'm talking. That's how you build culture at a place. You got players in a blowout saying, hey, you don't stand on the Spartan. You ever notice, like, in basketball culture, when players go back or when they're not playing, they don't wear their actual team gear. They don't. If a player is hurt in the NBA, they stand on the sideline with designer clothing, which I think is stupid. I think you should be required to wear at least something issued by the team because you're still getting paid by the team. But either way, when Michigan State players go back to Michigan State, they oftentimes wear Michigan State stuff, right? They could wear anything. They wear Michigan State stuff. That is culture. That word culture gets thrown around too much. That is real, real, real culture. I mean, Magic Johnson's one of the, 15, 20 most famous people in America? He can wear whatever he wants. When he's at Michigan State games, he's wearing Spartan gear. And I don't mind portaling or whatever. But you got players that are willing to fight for the logo, fight for the team. If I was a big Michigan State donor, that would make me sign over an extra $100K to that player. That means something to me. Yeah, that's why, like, you know, towards the end of the season, LSU tradition is to wear gold helmets, white tops, gold bottoms. That's our tradition. And I understand that it was the players that wanted to wear purple tops. I don't mind alternate uniforms. I don't mind wearing purple occasionally. But LSU fans grew up watching LSU play primarily their games, gold tops, white, or gold helmet, white tops, gold bottoms. Stuff matters. It's something. It's something. So, you know, Michigan State, that Spartan head means something. The middle of that basketball court, it means something. Yes, Christopher, I'm fasting 5 days. All right, we'll do it again. Next 5 to 10, I'll answer as many as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep it going. Great show tonight, guys. I love a good old school. I try to keep it an hour. I love a good 90-minute stream. Shout out to our top super chatters, Mr. Jared, Mr. TJ Reed, and Mr. LSU Fan for life. Don't forget, sign up for the PHL Patreon. We did a jersey number breakdown. You guys know jersey numbers mean something. You might not think that, but they mean something. Okay, there was one jersey number that perplexes me that was issued. Go to patreon.com/LSU football. And if you sign up, we're giving away a Ja'Marr Chase jersey at the end of April. We'll talk to you soon. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. You get access to our Discord chat. And tonight we are doing... Steaks. Let's go. Let's go.